Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Cardamandua.
Medijin.
I had said on the last episode that we were going to have some VIPs in while Lisa is away taking over the United Kingdom as a basis for taking over the rest of the world.
Ooh.
And I said too much again.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 124. You'll patch your eye out. I'm the Mian Team, and today I am joined by Dan Q.
I spy with my little eye something that is shiny.
Medijin.
Most we have the squirrel. Give me the shiny.
And coming out of retirement, the legendary Cardamandua.
Greetings, my fellow fan peoples.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say, greetings, my fellow fan.
My one fan. Hi. I wave to you.
Says that looks in the mirror. No, I'm kidding. You have many fans.
Right. Uh-huh.
So, yes, Cardamandua, a past regular co-host on Polycast, and one of the initial regular co-hosts on Revcast, has agreed to join us for this episode, and hopefully a few others between now and the beginning of October. Phil already welcomed you back, but I would do the same. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, and we are hopefully also going to be joined by...
Makalua.
He didn't sound very excited.
No, I was trying to be Makalua. My bad. Yes, they were also going to be joined by Mackie, hopefully, probably.
We are going to be talking about the latest patch for, I think it's Civilization 5. Was that the one that just had a really big patch? I forget already.
Nope.
Something like that. I thought a new game came out, but I was mistaken.
It is a new game. Actually, it's the old game again.
We talked about a couple of episodes ago, the last recording we had, initial impressions of the Civilization 5 patch before it was released, and then before that post-produced episode could be released, they actually released the patch 2 days after the recording. I was not consulted. Hate letters still coming. No, that's okay.
Hey, I went on vacation and they updated the patch notes after I wrote my patch notes blogs. That wasn't very nice.
Good time.
I know you have been playing Civ 5 post-patch, Mackie, and I know that not just because from your Steam profile, but also because Mackie's playing Civilization 5. Mackie's playing Civilization 5. Steam says, hey, Dan, did you know Mackie's playing Civilization
5? Yeah.
I've been whispering.
Something got
Steam
broken
is so
there.
Nosy. I don't want to know every time Mackie just won a game of Civ 5. Gosh.
She wins like every 3 minutes. I don't know how this happened.
Oh, I wanted to say something mean, like if Steam notified me every single time Mackie won a game of Civ 5, I'd never receive a notification, but that's not very
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also not true now. A couple of weeks ago that would have been true, but
I know who's the best player here. It's definitely not me.
Yeah, me either.
E3.
Oh, that
yeah,
just leaves
me a sport.
What?
Not competing with Madden in Civ 5. There's no point.
Oh, no, I'm watching his deity playthroughs, and it's like, are you doing this to deity?
Yeah.
I'm StarCraft. I've gotten soft.
Yes, you're soft.
Kind of like when we were talking about our impressions of the patch, this latest patch, which was, again, a June-July patch at the time, and because of its release became the June patch for Civ 5, where do we actually start talking about it? So where do we start talking about it now that it's actually been released? I guess by any where do I start talking about it? I guess in terms of changes, not necessarily in terms of good or bad, although I guess we could go either way.
All the series were fun. Now you have a more of an incentive to follow through to one and not just take a couple top and then move on to the next tree or something like that. You know, because getting like, I think I said it before about how I liked with Honor, because you start out getting culture, and if you follow all the way down, you're also getting extra happiness, but you're also getting a money for killing things or barbarians. And if you're on a big enough map, there's plenty of barbarians to go around. And I don't just mean the other civs.
You can now culture, how did I want to phrase this? You know,
culture poor.
Oh,
hey, that's what I was doing in the game. I was trying to get the Bollywood achievement, which is Gandhi with cultural win with three cities or less. And I really should I kept starting out with honor because I could sort of farm culture for a while, but that probably actually wasn't the best idea. I finally won with, like, two turns to spare.
Two turns to spare. Oh, you mean you had a time?
Yeah, time was on. I was two turns from time.
Yeah.
Hey, real people use time. If you can't do it in that amount of time, then you need to try another tactic.
Exactly. But yeah, honor's probably better for those more military-minded peoples who are looking for a source of culture while killing than for a straight culture approach.
They made changes. I like the polishy finishers.
Yeah, I do too, actually. It really does give you some trade-offs that didn't exist previously, so that is a good change.
Yeah, because it used to be, you know, always go right side of freedom and left side of this or...
You're more likely to use the policies, depending on what style of game you're trying to play, as to hitting an instant win button.
Yeah. It's like, go to meritocracy, then go to scientific theory, then go to... Oh, wait. Hey, look, the finisher for this one seems interesting now. So, no, those are good. There's a little bug in there, though, of course. Actually, finishing the tree costs you more culture, because it counts as a policy at the moment.
What?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody figured it out, and in my Rome game, you'll actually see it somewhere along the way. But yeah, they apparently kind of forgot, and when you finish a tree, your culture bump goes up an extra one.
Well, this would explain the trouble I was having with Gandhi and trying to do Bollywood.
Yeah, though I've seen on the forums people have been talking about how the developers actually have stated somewhere, I think this is just rumor actually, that the total amount of culture you need and the lines are accurate. It was just that this bug got them there and that they might in the next patch remove the bug but then up the policy costs to compensate. But it'll probably be closer to the late game policy costs because they obviously still want early game policies to be easy enough to grab even if you expand, because I'm guessing that they didn't like people going meritocracy all the time. But
at least they got its numbers changed back.
Yay! No more two cities to get something that you're supposed to get for the first city anyways.
Yes.
No, the policy finishers all seem okay, although, frankly, they really should switch the tradition finisher with the liberty finisher. I know they kept those within them because they just decided that they were each in the tree, but frankly, plus 15% growth and 2 food per city sounds a lot more like a wide empire than it does a tall one, and a great person of your choice does not sound like a wide empire at all.
No, it doesn't. Although maybe they intended that to be a balancing aspect if you went down one tree or the other. It certainly does clash a little bit, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of cool for a balance. If you go wide, you're going to get a free great person, which gets you a wonder such as, I don't know, Notre Dame with its plus 10 happiness, so you can afford to keep expanding. That's actually pretty decent. And tradition, well, yeah, I mean, if you want to expand, you shouldn't always be forced to go liberty. So being able to, say, go tradition and build up 4, 5, 6 cities and then run specialists as an empire, tradition finisher can let you do that. It benefits more the opposite way for the types, but it's okay, I guess. And, of course, aristocracy and marble got nerfed again. Another patch, another nerf.
No building wonders, except with great engineers.
Or Egypt.
Well, yeah, but you also have the good old autocracy set in general.
Stupid autocracy.
Don't use this social policy tree. We will make sure you do not ever use this.
Commerce. I'm a little sad about commerce.
Commerce is more acceptable than autocracy, though, because at least with commerce, it's not mutually exclusive with really good trees that are available earlier.
Well, autocracy is only now mutually exclusive to freedom and order. They got rid of the liberty part. But, given your choice between order, the new order anyways, which is worse than the old order, I think, and freedom, which is different than it was before and probably a little bit more balanced, Yeah, Autocracy is still not exactly high on the list of things to take. In even the changes that they did in there, I would have loved to see those earlier in the tree.
And Autocracy just earlier, because by the time you're getting these kind of bonuses, unless you go straight for it, you're going to have done most of your warring. You're only going to be facing maybe a modern war.
Late modern by the time you get to
it. Yeah, exactly.
I guess it does, well, in its previous incarnation, it did allow you to annex all your cities pretty easily, but I don't know.
Yeah, you could, but I mean, obviously you lose your social policy costs.
They're
flying through the roof. So if you hit the police state and go, yeah, police state previously was better than theocracy, an annex city with certain other changes and police state actually did better for happiness than a theocracy puppet. Or a theocracy based of your own city of the same size. So that was good. The problem is the moment you start using police state, you'll never be able to finish the autocracy tree.
Yeah. Wow.
Which defeats the purpose. And of course, courthouses are still bugged. They still have the bug where it wipes out the unhappiness per city or something along the line there. It just the unhappiness doesn't make any sense as soon as you throw a courthouse in there.
So you could build courthouses in non-annex cities or no?
No.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could.
Yeah, because apparently.
Yeah, because in a different game I was playing as Egypt, I had taken over Arabia, which only had their one city of Mecca, and it was dragging my unhappiness down so bad, and then the courthouse got done, it's like, boom, I now have 10 happy. What?
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of it is going from an annexed city to a non-annexed city, so you're going to get some happiness back. But, you know, if you go from puppet to courthouse city, you still gain happiness, even though you shouldn't. It's weird. It's definitely a bug in there somewhere. But now police state also gives you 3 more happiness per courthouse. So
it's almost like an incentive to go annex things and have them build courthouses, because it's
cheap. Yeah, I guess maybe like end game you could do something like that when you don't need any more social policies. But it just seems like the game is over by the time you could possibly make good use of the social policy tree in general.
Yeah, I mean, 30 turns attack bonus of plus 20%.
Yay.
Now my nukes are 20% more effective.
If only.
Yeah. Hey, my GDR didn't fall to 10 barbarians.
Woohoo!
But yeah, I would agree. If at the point where you, say, do finish Autocracy, and you're going on that last minute rush of slaughtering the AI to try and get your domination victory in modern, I guess. Assuming they fix the courthouse bug, then police state now basically gets rid of the unhappiness per city with its new 3 happiness per courthouse. So you could go on a rampage annexing cities as you go so that you can keep your happiness in check, which was always a problem with late game wars where the AI had massive pop cities and your unhappiness just took a nosedive and never recovered.
Yeah, it kind of got bad when you fell into the more than negative 10 range and your army actually got weaker too.
Vexing worked it all out, and yeah, the whole concept of balance for building production, for beaker costs, for wonder costs, for all of that has basically got thrown out the window, and now you just have a column of tech cost with some minor changes, and each of the production for all the buildings and for all the wonders is based off of that column, not based off of balance reasons. So that's a really long rant. That's probably not related to this subject, but we can get into it.
Although, since you've noted that, maybe you could tell us, which it obviously when you have something that's designed that way, you're going to have elements of gameplay that are too good because of that setup, and also things that are a little underpowered or weak. Have you noticed any patterns there yet?
Well, I mean, one of the first things people got really mad about, and it is related to the patch, is that the seaport lost one of its production points to the harbor, which was a good change because, frankly, if you're on an archipelago map or something else, then you're going to have some problems getting hammers early until you at least get the seaport. And that was kind of one of the points of the change, which seemed like a good idea. But the problem is the cost actually went up for the seaport, but you only get one hammer per turn, one hammer per resource at that point. So the seaport there is worth 250 hammers now, which is the same as a windmill. And I think it's the same as a, it might be the same as a bank or something similar in there. And it's like, no, the windmill is by far a better producer. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. That they basically took the concept of balance and made it bland. And I kind of feel sad for the developers who initially put in balance to the tech tree and the buildings and all of that. Yeah, it might have been slightly off and needed some tweaks, but pretty much everything just got thrown out the window. And in certain cases, that was kind of okay, like ironworking going cheaper, education and some of the other ones getting a little cheaper, so you can actually do some timing pushes, you know, actually have some strategy in there. But some of the other stuff just doesn't make any sense anymore.
Is there anything you find that's too cheap now?
Well, I mean, Archer rushes.
Well, I'm thinking along the lines of buildings, but yeah, when I heard that Archer's had the same hammer cost as Warriors, it's just an eyebrow raiser there. Because yeah. I already was doing some abusive things with Archer, some special tactics, if you will, in the previous patches, so.
Yeah. Archers are a little cheaper now. Well, it's just a certain point. Like, certain techs should cost a little bit more because they're more key. And certain buildings should cost a little more. I haven't really gone and checked the numbers for against, like, what it was before versus what it is now. But since they standardized all the buildings, I have to worry. They did make a few changes to the tech tree, which were actually a good plan. They were a good idea, like stopping instant steel longsword rushes, where basically you ignored the first half of the medieval tech tree because you just went to longswords, and any unit before that point was considered fairly useless unless it was a unique unit.
Speaking of RA spam, how do you find RAs now in practice?
In practice, actually better. Obviously, right from before the patch, as soon as I saw the notes, I'm like, okay, we're going to game it again for median shifting. I think I tried to coin that phrase, but it semi caught on. Basically, you're shifting the median because you're getting 50% of the beaker value of the median tech. So what that basically comes down to is of all the techs that you have open at the time of the research agreement, it finds the middle one. Or if there's an even number, it averages the middle. But it finds the middle one, looks at the beaker tech, and gives you half of that beaker value. Now, obviously, you can boost that with the Porcelain Tower, which gets you up to 75%, and the Opener of Rationalism, which gives you up to 100% of that median. So that's kind of where we start talking about median shifting, because you'll have a couple high beaker value techs in there, and what you want to do is kind of keep shifting the middle tech beaker value up as you get the research agreements. But if you don't take Porcelain Tower and you don't take Rationalism Opener, then the tech tree is a lot slower to get through.
I would imagine there would be some bias against taking research agreements with somebody who receives more from it than you, especially the person who has the Porcelain Tower. Now, I doubt that AI would do anything so advanced as that, but well, once multiplayer works, that might be considered.
Yeah, it could be the Porcelain Tower turns into the anti-game. Like, take Porcelain Tower, and that'll be the last thing you ever do, because no one will touch you anymore. But no, well, in my Rome game that's now showing up on YouTube, I didn't make it to the Porcelain Tower, and I purposely didn't go Rationalism. But the AI that did do that was definitely far ahead of all of the rest of us when it came to techs. It was still pushing out research agreements, though it didn't seem to have the same spam that it did pre-patch. So there definitely was not as many research agreements going around, especially to it. But overall, the tech flow, even for the AI, slows down if they don't have the Porcelain Tower and Rationalism. So it's a little easier to keep up.
Which, of course, a good thing.
Well, on Deity, that's not such a good thing. It's supposed to be hard, not easy.
Well, no, but I always felt like the strategy in the game and the relative importance of other things against tech trades, against research agreements, against whatever mechanic was there that allowed you to easily acquire techs, it always favored too strongly the tech trades or research agreements. Like, it was just so much stronger than any other aspect of research or anything else. Like, your micromanagement was such a small contributing factor compared to that, that it just got overwhelmed by the research agreements. So if they can just make the difficulty harder in a different way that requires better player control, as opposed to just gaming the AI constantly, that would be a step in the right direction, in my opinion. I really don't like the strength of tech trades and research agreements, both of them.
Oh, no, I totally agree. This is the problem with a strategy game where everything is based off the tech tree. All your social policy trees open with the tech tree. All of your units open with parts of the tech tree. All of your buildings open with the tech tree. All of the wonders open with the tech tree, et cetera, et cetera. Let alone, stuff like economics, chemistry, and fertilizer and others that give you stuff when you hit the tech tree at a certain point, and strategic resources. The tech tree is the core of the whole game. So if you can game the tech tree, you game the whole system. And I do agree, cutting research agreements down from instant tech pops does balance it out a little bit more, especially on harder levels, because on harder levels, all you were doing was trying to keep up with the AI on tech tree spam between great scientists and research agreements. And if you couldn't do that, you were dead. So at least now that's been brought back a little bit, so you can have more of the rest of the system. Of course, the problem with doing that is they didn't fix the rest of the system. The AI still doesn't know how to do combat. They're horrifyingly bad at it. They still hoard all their gold, so they never spend it. When you have an AI losing a city every few turns, and it still has 24,000 gold but refuses to buy nukes even though it can, that's not a good thing.
On the research agreement thing, I know it. In the before time, gosh, I make this game sound old.
In the long, long ago?
In a far, far distant land. Much simpler time. When people were noble and, okay, I'll stop.
Okay.
In the before time, there was a lot of, okay, with regards to the research agreements, how do we direct what technology we're going to be getting? And there was that blocking mechanism with a certain bit of research into certain types of ones, and then that was changed, and now some people have said, okay, we can see why this change is made to the research agreement, but I'd like to be able to direct this buff that you get when the research agreement ends, which is... Excuse me, yes, it goes towards whatever technology you are currently researching, and then the question became, well, what about that overflow? Where does that overflow go? And on CFC, Snarsberry said that based on my last game, I thought I discovered that if you pre-select the line of text to research, then any overflow is directed down your chosen line. So if you decide, for instance, you want to go education, of course, once you have philosophy still required in order to get that research agreement, then if you choose education, then it will pop up with civil service and theology, and if you choose that, now you've been able to, at least based on this, and Weasel Slapper, oh my gosh, that's his username, I'm not making this up.
There's always usernames like that.
Anyway, he said that he wouldn't be surprised if this was the case, since in the new system they give you the beakers and the technology that you're currently researching. And Marvin Alvito says it's worked for me the last few times, although I haven't gotten a large enough sample size yet to say anything conclusive. And it was only when I read this that I realized, actually, that is my experience as well, even though I didn't realize it at the time. Like, I was really trying to decide with research agreements, do I even bother anymore? And at first, I was just like, you know what, I'm not going to bother with them, partially because I don't understand what the heck, I don't want to get into it. And I was finding that, oh, man, by not doing this, I am falling behind in technology as compared to everybody else, and those were friendly AIs and not-so-friendly AIs. So now that it seems like we have an idea of what happens in terms of that overflow, then I feel like, okay, I'm going to be able to get a little bit more benefit to the research agreements because I can at least influence where that overflow is going to go once it gets to the end of the current technology. I don't know if anybody else, if you've noticed that, Badger, and honestly, I didn't notice it until I read it and I realized, oh yeah, I think that's what was happening.
I haven't actually played with the science side of things yet, but it's good to know that, you know, Martin and Vexing and Snarsberry and some of the others were all over it fairly quickly to find out how to do it. I knew the system could be gamed right from the start, especially with the medium shifting, but it's good to know that you can focus the overflow, because that, you know, getting 90 to 100 beakers in a random tech that you're not even interested in is a bit of an annoyance. So it's good to know that you can focus it. And it's also important to note that it doesn't have to be the next tech in the line. Don't forget you can shift select. So if, say, you're working on civil service, but the next tech you want is currency, if you shift select those, then you can ensure the overflow actually follows through if you finish civil service with the research agreement. The happiness system is ICS for dummies.
Seriously, I have not had anywhere near the happiness problems I used to.
Yeah, I think I've gone through a game with five or six cities, early expansion, tapped Notre Dame, and blatantly ignored ever building a Colosseum or a circus, and just built, you know, went organized religion, built temples and monuments, and I was still positive happy with, you know, 6 to 8 pop per city. Something went weird on the happiness system. It's basically...
What social policies were you running?
At that point, I'd finished most of Liberty, but didn't have meritocracy yet. I was about to. But meritocracy plus organized religion, I think it is, for piety, where you get plus one for monuments.
I heard you say that, so that made sense. But you can Well, they did nerf the Colosseum, so.
Yeah, but now you get the happiness from the monuments and the temple, plus meritocracy, and now you have zero unhappiness per city, if you want to look at it that way.
That's true. From pop.
Yep. Well, that's the thing, though. They took a lot of per pop or...
Oh, and put it into per city. That's right.
They put it global. They didn't even put it city per city. I don't think there is a single per city bonus here, or like a reduction of the three. There's no more reductions for the three unhappiness per city, but there is a vast quantity of plus per building or plus per city or plus per trade route, and along that line, that's global. And since it's global, I can build monument, temple, monastery, stoneworks, and a long list of other things for a city, keep it at one pop, and it's producing a crazy number of happiness just for my empire.
That's right. You can circumvent the limit of having the happiness, a city generating happiness this way.
Yep. It's horribly disgusting now. I mean, they tried to get rid of ICS tactics like that before, but then they just basically threw it all back in. You get happiness from everything, and it's not tied to the city population.
Maybe they just put the bullet and accepted ICS as the game strategy. I don't know.
I don't think it's optimal, though. Like, I heavily expanded my Rome game. I don't think it's that optimal for doing it. I mean, it used to be before where you could put libraries and some other stuff in there and generate a lot of great people fairly quickly with some really small cities. But the amount you get overall isn't really that different.
Oh, okay. So there's not much draw from having the small crappy city. It doesn't do much for you.
Yeah, but you can get those small crappy cities all up to 10 pop each, and then they're not really small crappy cities, but now you have 110 pop cities.
Well, that's pretty late game stuff then, though.
Depends on what you get. You need certain wonders and stuff to help that along. But the patch changes for the happiness system, yeah, I think they definitely broke it. All they really needed to do was make some adjustments to make the population related happiness function properly for reducing all the reducers and everything, which helped you generate too much happiness and even allowed you to get more happiness based on the population, not less, the way they did it for the Colosseums and that, to be able to, you know, still build cities. But I think they just kind of, they were so close to a happiness system that would work for the game and then just kind of tossed it all out the window. And went back to just, you know, pluses everywhere, and it's all global, so there's no real system. And as I railed on my blog, as soon as I saw all of this, I'm like, yeah, Gandhi doesn't even need to have the happiness system turned on. You can just, you know, turn it off, and you'll have the exact same game with Gandhi, just because his happiness reduction part of the unique ability completely wipes out the happiness unhappiness part of his unique ability at a certain pop range, and then everything after that is a joke. So yes, Gandhi is still the ICS king. Doesn't even need a single social policy.
That's silly.
Oh, one of the developers and publishers had actually said was, if you are going, once you are in the new patch, expect yourself to perhaps wanting to roll back a difficulty level. Now, Imagine doesn't need to answer this question because it doesn't apply to him. But for the rest, for the rest of us, I found the answer to that is yes and no. If I am, and this seems to be the distinguishing feature, I think this goes back to the artificial intelligence and how it deals with certain map types. If there is water on the map, and by water, I mean I am separated from AI by having to go across the ocean, and they are from, and from me, and it's, you know, a significant factor to actually getting to that particular civilization. So, continents, for example, or even islands, then I, even at the beginning, even at the start, I was able to handle Emperor because the AI still is failing miserably when it comes to overseas warfare. And by doing overseas warfare, I mean actually if doing it at all, doing it very, very badly. But if it was a land-based map, I found that, yes, I did have to go back a difficulty level, so I was going down to King, but I do play on quick speed, and I know we've talked about before how particularly some of the earlier ages, there's my word, that they go by so quickly under quick speed so that it actually feels like it's a little bit more difficult than the difficulty currently at. So I don't know if that's been other people's experience as well.
Yeah, because the game I was talking about with Bismarck, where I was Egypt and trying to win the cultural and not cultural, diplomatic, I keep confused, those two confused for some reason. Ah, but he was across an ocean from me. And he had this huge army that he picked off of barbarian camps that he steamrolled Mongolia with, but he never came across to me, even though my army later on got to be close to the strength of his, even if it wasn't as many units. But never once did he even try to attack. There was an island that had a couple of city-states that were mine and one colony kind of thing of mine, and he didn't even try to attack that. That was right off his coast. You know, he researched Manhattan Project, and I kept expecting, okay, nukes any second, please let me win diplomatic, and no, not a peep. It's like he ignored the fact that I was over there or something. It's so strange.
And of course, I'm still, when it comes to victory conditions, yeah, I do have everything enabled except for time.
Wuss.
Take the time victory.
It is a shallow and a hollow, meaningless victory condition that I do not recognize. Okay, And because I hit the table, that really makes it.
Right.
Well,
when it comes to overseas maps, in addition to that, if I scout the AI, and I've seen that too, that on that other continent, one civ will end up being, if not the only one on that map, they're the only significant player, and then by that point, I take it out mine on my continent, and they're typically ahead in technology, and so yeah, I'm waiting, I'm thinking, are they going to be able to dominate me before I'm able to dominate them? And if they happen to have their capital on the coast, since all we have to do is actually capture that in order to win that domination victory, the game just goes that much more quickly, and I'm able to also bring over my units to them, and I don't typically have to have an escorting offensive military. They just embark, and I can even have them sit outside the borders. Just sit there and sit there. You know, you get that notification, oh, you seem to be amassing a lot of troops on my border. I hope you're not going to declare on me. And I love that. No, we're just passing through the area. And it's like, oh, I do indeed hope that is just the reason, and I can sit there. And they don't do anything. Nothing changes. I go in, and they're gone. But if it's all land-based right now, I find that, yes, I've needed to roll back, which I've gotten to Emperor. I've needed to roll back to King. For now, anyway, for now. I think since the last couple of weeks, I've had just under 30 hours of playtime with the retail version of Civ 5.
This is a problem for me because they still haven't made the pre-settler level. So I'm not sure if I can play Civ 5 with a patch. I might have.
There is a training series.
How degrading.
The pre-settler is not degrading, though.
No, it's a real level, you see.
That's setting your own handicap for yourself. Being told that you need to go through training. Well,
yeah.
I know how to click the mouse, thank you. I know how to select my units. I know how to move them. I don't need training.
I just play so I can watch the sheep jump anyway.
Yeah. They do fun tricks when you watch them for a long time.
Yeah. Some games go like that.
Gotta have something to do while you're waiting for the computer to make its move.
Yep. But they did make it harder, per se, in the fact that the AI douses you early and often, even on, especially on the higher levels. Now, I've heard people up to King and Emperor and that, seeing that they're getting attacked a lot more with decent military at that point, which obviously wasn't really happening before on those levels. And so you're kind of trying to deal with something that used to exist only at Immortal or Deity before, but even on Deity, the first 100 turns is more of a survival fest for most games. I mean, I've got my Rome game up, but, you know, I did play around with it for a few days on different maps and different settings to see what the changes really happened. And, yeah, getting doubt on turn 19 come right at you, that's hard. Unfortunately, since they don't know how to upgrade their units or use them effectively, yeah.
Just open Warrior first. That's...
Oh, I just did a game last night where I started it for a new LP. I settle my settler, send out the warrior, meet Japan, only a few tiles away from me, finish pottery, start working on archery because, well, they're only a few tiles away from me. I still had 5 turns left on archery to research when they doubted me with 6 units.
Yeah.
Probably.
You know, that change that we're seeing now on King and Emperor as opposed to, you know, Immortal and Deity, that if they actually do declare war, it's actually a purposeful, like, they're already kind of, oh, yes, I had a few rage quit moments, but I'm thinking, okay, this is a good change. It's a good to adapt. I think it's going to improve my gameplay, and I think it has. But the thing that really ticks me off, and maybe I'm just noticing it more now because they actually have a meaningful military, is that they can have the friendliest disposition toward me the turn before. Because I noticed, you know, like when it comes to open borders, if they say friendly and they'll take the 50 gold, sometimes they'll be like, no, that's not good enough, and then I'll only be able to get like 43 gold or something. So I start thinking, there's something amiss here. But it could be friendly the previous turn. They've showed no aggressive tendencies towards me. And then I get the declaration of war, and always, always in the dialogue box it talks about, this is called backstabbing. I know I'm a backstabber, but that's so sad, too bad. You know, declare war. And then I think, oh, what the heck? Like, other than the fact that perhaps you were getting up in my grill, which is a problem if they're really, really, really close on a land-based map, I've learned that I need to be able to at least defend myself from an onslaught and not be looking more about expanding even farther away from where I am, because they could come in and they could take my city or two that is, you know, of a particular production value and or is giving me the gold that I need, and then now I'm behind the eight ball, and it's, yeah, I'm going to be able to get out of it, but while I'm doing that, that civ is getting stronger, and another civ near me is getting stronger and stronger still, and I just feel like this is going to spiral out of control. I'm always going to be behind the eight ball. Is there any victory condition that I think I'm going to be able to reasonably get to? But I ended up just quitting that. It's the kind of... The turn before, there was absolutely no indication that you were going to backstab me, and it seems like that backstabbing is happening an awful lot.
Oh, like, you don't backstab the AI. Oh, come on. Do you tell the AI that you're mad at them before you get to them and attack them?
Denounced.
No, I'm not saying no, I don't. I hear what you're saying, but still, as a human player... Like, it just seems to be, there should be some indication. At least you used to do the denouncing thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, on the diplomatic system, they're supposed to show you if they're mad at you for something. But I do find that when they're planning on backstabbing you, it'll just say that they're friendly. And
yeah, that's like, coded into the game. Someone looked into the XML about that, and they will misrepresent their disposition. There's supposedly trigger ways to tell, and now I've forgotten them, but... I'll find them again when I start playing Civ 5 more.
There are certain ways you can tell, but no, even the list of why they're mad at you won't actually appear until after they've declared war on you or after they've backstabbed, denounced you if they were a friend. That might be a bit of a pain for Dan's situation.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at.
Do you think that it's good that they early rush you in that should they fail? That's going to set an AI back a lot, and I start wondering if that's really a winning strategy for the AI to do that right away. If a player gets used to it and can now consistently stop it, it's throwing away units that it could be using for something better than just letting the human farm experience. So from that standpoint, I do have some concerns with that, the consistency of that strategy from the AI.
Yeah, it's not.
I also don't like that the AI cheats to know that what you did before you met it. That still pisses me off, like, for like nothing. But that was in Civ 4. They put that in Civ 5, too. You declared a war on a Civ you'd have packed a friendship with. That Civ's dead! And you didn't know it.
You killed off Arabia before you ever saw my continent. That's Shut right. up.
Yep. The early DAO can, I think it depends on the Civ and what happens and what they do. Like, you know, Monty, Jaguar Rush, he's not really going to get hurt by constantly Jaguar Rushing. Because if somebody else shows up, well, he'll just go spam out more Jaguars. This Japan attack that I had where it was halfway through archery that I was just talking about. Japan DAOs me, sends over about 4 or 5 initial warriors. I get archers up with oligarchy, and I just wipe them all out and walk 3 to 4 archers over with 2 warriors and start attacking one of their secondary cities. Well, halfway through the attack on me, Denmark, who was on the other side of Japan, declared war on Japan and took the other expansion city. So by the time we were done, Japan had its capital because it was really easy to defend, but that was it. And that was basically the end of Japan.
Well, yeah, but that's a bad strategy for Japan then. It's consistently, an AI that does this with any consistency is going to screw itself over.
Oh, that was a bad plan, but I've also seen other situations where, any Civ that starts with a unique warrior can really do it well, like Polynesia and Aztecs, where I've seen, you know, early DAOs on other AIs actually take cities. And keep them. Now, granted, in my Rome LP, the Incans somehow managed to take the Siamese capital for a number of turns, and then Siam actually took it back for once, which was really weird, because Siam had, like, crappy cities at that point. I think that's the first time I've ever seen a Civ take its capital back within a game after losing it. So I think some of it is there. It's kind of like a six-pull in for the Zerg. It's an all-in strategy. Either it works and you win, or it doesn't and you might as well quit. But that's just the same. I mean, an all-in DAO early game, it could give you a huge advantage, or it could kill you. Same for going the opposite way. You can just go tall and be builder. If you're left alone, that'll give you a huge advantage. If you get DAO'd and forgot to build defenses, you're going to lose your empire. So, there is a balance point in there. Should so many AIs just do it? No. They shouldn't all be DAOing where possible. Now, the AI does love to be, does love to pile on. So if you are surrounded by 3 or 4 AI civs, do expect to get DAOed by each of them in turn or all at once and basically get trashed because you won't be able to fight off 3 to 4 AIs all at the same time. But it would be advantageous for the second or third or fourth AI to walk in and grab a secondary city or DAO somebody who's been in a war.
Like Denmark did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's the same for us. I mean, when we did longsword rushes, if we sent 4 or 5 longswords pre-patch after one civ and another civ showed up to our capital with a big army, well, you know, you're taking a risk. So I think it's okay. I just don't think it should be as often or as consistently found. But, you know, keep a gold stack and a couple units, a gold stack being 400 to 500 gold, and it mostly keeps them from wanting to attack you right away. For some reason, they think, you know, a giant vault of gold is defense.
I'm trying to sound intelligent here, Matt. Help me out.
You're Canadian. It should be okay.
you wouldn't be biased in that statement, would you?
No.
No. Segway, speaking of bias. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, man. Really?
I'm sorry, Annalie. I'm segue. I couldn't help it. I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I was sending you all these secret messages, and you were ignoring me. No, I actually wasn't doing that.
Yeah, right.
So, starting bias, also in Civ 5, from B. Siako.
B. Kaiko?
I know the starting bias causes certain civs to begin near certain terrain types, but does it also currently cause civs to be biased to be near other civs, like Asian civs more likely to appear near each other? Quote unquote. Let's just start off by saying I'm going to start answering your question by answering a related question, which is, in part, what did the patch do as far as starting bias goes? And as I recall correctly, the only thing that it did is remove what was America's starting bias. So now they have no starting bias. It was by a river, and now they have none. I think I didn't put it in my patch notes, because at the time I didn't think it was important enough to do that, because I didn't think I was going to mention it, but here I'm going to mention it anyway. Someone asked, I guess it's related to BC Aqua's thing about, is it cause it to be biased to be near other certain civs, like the culturally linked starts from Civ 4, if I recall correctly. And I think in Civ 5, anyway, it's just near a particular terrain type. And if you've chosen a map type that really doesn't lend itself to that terrain, then it will give you a little bit of piecemeal terrain to that effect in order to give you that starting bias.
Yeah, and I guess if you had a situation where you had enough civs with the same starting bias, they might tend to start near each other. But I don't know that there's any cultural thing, and I'm pretty sure there wasn't in Civ 4. I think it's Civ 3 you're thinking about when it comes to the culturally linked setup.
Oh, okay. Well, we won't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have yet to see a cultural start bias actually appear. Obviously they do have terrain biases for a few of the civs. Vexing's pointing out in the thread that the map generation script has some of those in there, and it tries to put you in a terrain type that you're supposed to have a start bias with, but you know, you don't always generate a map with starting biases for everybody. So it'll pick you a spot that's close to your starting bias, but maybe not directly in it. So it's always good to know that you're not always going to get the exact same type of start, which would be annoying. If you constantly have, say, a desert start as the Arabs, that's not exactly the greatest territory to be in.
Or even necessarily Russia's tundra either.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking to yourself, well, that really sucks, there is a game option that, forget the first word, sorry, maybe it's disable culture bias or something like that. I often check that, actually.
Yeah, you can disable start bias. You can make all sorts of interesting advanced option changes. But yeah, so you can disable the start bias so that basically it's just a random selection of where you start. Now, I've always wondered if the chosen order of the civs in the game, so when you start in a standard map, there's 8 positions, whether or not the chosen civs for each of those positions are actually linked. So I don't know if you can game it that way. So this would mean, you know, if positions 2 and 3 always start, you know, within 12 tiles of each other, you know, can you game that at that point and basically put all the aggressive civs by themselves and then you hang out in the corner?
Hmm.
But I haven't dug into that. But I think that's probably one of the closest things for linking closeness. But then again, I mean, if they do have the terrain start bias, obviously, they're not going to build a map so that it links up to that list, I hope.
Yeah, I haven't really tried the game Civ 5 settings like I did in Civ 4, just because I haven't played any Hall of Fame. In Civ 4 Hall of Fame, you could do nonsense, but usually you're just picking soft leaders when it came to that. Which I guess you can still do in Civ 5. You can pick the AIs that are known to be a little bit less competitive on purpose and put them in there.
Yeah.
Hey, just for the sake of full disclosure, we already mentioned poor Russia and Arabia's terrain starting bias. The English and the Ottomans and the Polynesians, ocean. India, grassland, Iroquois forests, no, really. And Mongolians, plains, also, no, really. Historically.
Yeah, they try, and don't forget the Incans are on hills, and Aztec are in the jungles, and yada yada. Each of the civs have some sort of terrain that works better with them, so it's good to find out that, you know, they do try. Like Polynesia starting in the middle of a continent with all snow or tundra or ice and absolutely no water near them, probably a good time to reroll.
But take a screenshot of it first and post it in the funny screenshot.
Yeah.
I do like the third biases that help a Civ use its unique traits, though. You had too often in previous games unique units that were totally useless because you were landlocked or vice versa.
Yeah, like Incan not starting anywhere near hills just kind of says, okay, well, so much for all of the unique ability.
Thread that has more than, as of a few days ago, more than 55,000 views and more than 440 replies. This is craziness. Civ 5 stock image scavenger hunt. It's started by Orson M, where we look at the game's images and find the stock image that was used either as a visual reference or just straight up applied as a Photoshop filter. I guess there was a similar scavenger hunt done for Neverwinter Nights, a game that on its first installment used visual references that were clearly models and actors. So in the first few responses, you can see images that were, if not a visual reference, if not an outright copy and paste, a visual reference for what we see as banana, deer, elephant, cotton, cinnamon, etc. in the game. And some people have gotten really excited about this, like really, really heated. This is outrageous. This is ridiculous. And
it's because some of them are so blatant. Like, you know, you could draw something in so many different ways, but to have it be so obviously copied from this photo, as some of them are, I mean, yeah, it's an interesting copyright infringement concept.
Yeah, especially like some of them, they just open them up in Photoshop, put another layer on top, and basically use their pad or the mouse to trace right over it.
Uh-huh.
I think it is a bit of a copyright issue in the sense that it's then being applied to a commercial product. But then some people would also say that, well, it's available on the internet, so therefore it's free, but that's also really problematic because who's to say that that was put with permission?
Into it.
By the people who did it. And at the same time, then there's also the counter-argument about, well, you know, copying is the most sincere form of flattery, and I think the balance is somewhere in between the two. But I guess my question is, if you identify, and I agree there's some really strong, if not, like, exact similarities, but if you are able to find this, like, what do people want to see change? Do you want to see it substituted now? Do you want them not want to do that in the future? What is the response that you're looking for? You know, it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to catch this guy. And then it's, you know, well, what are you going to do once you do that? What's the next step?
A lot of images are just public domain. And frankly, for a lot of the games now, art is paying an artist to actually draw a lot of this stuff by hand. Even if there's a public, you know, publicly available image, is just dumb business, frankly. It costs a lot to get them to actually do it. That's why most of the artist jobs are now tossed off to the Ukraine or some other place that can pay them cheaply, because a lot of the art is, yeah, it's public domain stuff, so why should Firaxis go and redo it? Now, I can see certain photographs that might not be public domain, might be some photographer's actual part of, you know, of their actual gallery. Being stolen might not be so cool, especially on the copyright concept. But when it comes to the vast majority of the stuff, I mean, if it's public domain, it's public domain. Can't really do much about it, and it keeps the cost down. Now, unfortunately, we all know that Firaxis didn't, and 2K didn't spend the money elsewhere very effectively, so, you know, that's that.
Oh, boy!
That's slightly problematic, but, you know, if their artists, you know, were able to pound out this many graphics fairly quickly, plus get it in all the game and all the sizes and all that, you know, it takes time, and you don't want to be paying artists a lot of time just to do basic graphics. You want to try and pay them to do, you know, more interesting things. Unfortunately, they didn't also do the interesting things, so what can you do?
Yeah, and if there's one place I would look for improvement in the game, it wouldn't be stuff like this. I think most of the images chosen are fine from a gameplay sense, gameplay standpoint. And anything that's public domain, I don't have a problem with. I also don't have a problem with them using things that aren't public domain as long as they get permission. I don't see how this is necessarily a bad thing, so to speak.
Maybe people are just upset that the lack of creativity or, you know, where, I don't know, where the game is so much art, and then maybe people are disappointed with, you know, it's a little...
Maybe.
You know what I mean? You lose it.
Never broke a game, especially Civ 4. It's not, or Civ in general, even Civ 5. It's not what makes Civ 5. Yeah, the draw of Civ 5, I mean, certainly the art is there, and it should look nice and whatever, but at its core, at least in theory, it's a strategy game, and the depth of that strategy and the choices you make and the trade-offs you take when you do make those choices are what really make the gameplay. I don't know, at least for me. Maybe some people just like looking at creatively drawn pictures that are new and different from pictures that 99.9 or whatever percent of people don't bother looking up on Google images normally. I don't know.
Yeah, if you're able to connect the fact that the reason this person or these people bought the game is because they used this particular image or this set of images, and either there wasn't just all we needed was written permission and you didn't get that, or you didn't pay a royalty, but yes, it was online, and yes, you took it, but you didn't investigate to find out whether or not where you were getting it from was the actual author, or at least reasonable steps to find out where it was an actual author, could in itself be problematic. Who just said in the chat here, Batman said that I own a license to operate Civ 5. I should like to think that Firaxis Take-Two would appreciate the additional exposure. My posting of Civ 5 screenshots.
There you go.
Yeah. Would it have been nicer had they actually, I don't know, put something from Civ 1 or Civ 2 in there for the wonders? Sure, that would have been cool. Animations, real stuff. But they went with pictures instead. Eh. I agree with Phil. The game's supposed to be a strategy game. So if they kind of do the graphics bit on the fly and just make it quick and fast, or quick and dirty just to get it in there, as long as it doesn't detract from the game, it's fine. Obviously keeping perfectly legal with the usage model and all that stuff, of course.
Comments today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I know I've said this before, I'll say it again. We love to talk about Civ, but we love to play it even more, and there's also some real-life stuff that needs to be taken care of, unfortunately.
Yeah, you have to eat sometimes, and that at least involves going up to get food and bringing it back to the computer.
Isn't that what Skype is for? Call.
Well, you're still not playing Civ, though, when you're doing that. You gotta... Oh, I see. You'd call someone to bring it to you. Yeah, I guess. I guess that works.
Efficiencies here. Efficiencies. Yeah.
They arrive when you order food. They deliver it. They get to your door.
They get in the room. Door's open.
Well, yeah, you say door's open. Door's actually locked. Aw, can you just break it down? I can't get up. I'm playing the game. It's Civ right now.
Then they sit down and eat it.
There's a window to my room. You can just come through that. It's all good.
Well, this has been Polycast episode 124. I am Medigen, and we had the Mian team.
My start bias is uranium.
Wow.
Oh. Bakalua, before I forget.
My start bias is anywhere not next to Phil, so I don't get collaterally nuked.
Dan Q?
If you don't have anything nice to say, you may be more trustworthy than you sound.
Dan makes 200% of what any of the rest of us do on this show.
Oh.
Just so you know.
Oh. What? Oh. Yeah. 200% of nothing is... Wait.
Yeah.
Annalie, don't bring logic on here, okay? That's.
I didn't say anything untrue there.
Did I make your brain hurt? I'm sorry. I didn't.
You say you're sorry, but I don't believe you.
That's because you know me.
That's true.
And Curdy Mandua.
I'm still too young for this.
Record date July 9th, 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Sound Clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.